Well, you know, this time of the year can produce some anxiety and stress. Some people get happy, some people get depressed. Well, we're going to talk about Lighthouse Network. It's a Christian-based nonprofit organization that offers mental health and addiction referral program and helpline that strives to equip people and organizations with skills necessary to shine God's love to the world and stand strong on solid foundation in the storms of their lives and providing guidance and safety to others experiencing stormy times, thus impacting their lives, families, and their world. We are delighted to have with us today Dr. Carl Benzio. He's the founder and the executive director of Lighthouse Network. Dr. Benzio, what a delight to have you, sir. Where are you calling from this morning?
Hey, good morning. Great to be with you guys. I'm calling from the Philadelphia area over here on the East Coast.
Well, cold out there.
It's chilly, chilly. We're having a nice day in the high 40s, low 50s, but it's been in the 20s for a couple nights in a row, so it's winter is upon us.
All right. Well, Doctor, thank you for being with us, and this is such a timely discussion. And, you know, we do a lot of counseling shows here on the Dove, both on the radio and the TV, and I can tell you this time of year, anxiety levels go up. And I think you add to it the condition of our country and world, it seems to be magnified. Why are the holidays so stressful?
Well, how long is your show?
I mean, well, go ahead. I'll cut you off when it's time. No, just go ahead.
You know, this is a difficult time of year for many people. Like you say, it's a time of celebration and joy for many, but there's just a lot of different sort of categories of issues and stressors that come along. Probably the most common and glaring is family conflicts. You know, this time of year is one where families get together, extended families are going to gather in various places, and there's a lot of baggage that people have from family situations, things that have been unresolved, forgiveness hasn't been expressed, ownership and responsibility of those, you know, past transgressions. So there's just a lot of conflict, and the anticipation of getting together, the stress of that process, bubbles and bubbles, and it can explode around the holidays. Another element is oftentimes this is the first holiday experiencing it without a loved one. Mm-hmm. So somebody who's lost a spouse, lost a child, in a divorce situation or through death, those make it very difficult to get through the holidays and just the past remembrances of happy holidays in the past and the future hopelessness of, wow, I'm not going to have that person around.
You know,
choosing between, which sides of the family do you go to? Do we go to my wife's side? Do we go to, my side of the family? And, you know, having to do that that splitting thing or trying to travel both places in the same day. Lots of travel, decreased sleep, busy, hectic schedules, Christmas shopping. With that comes financial stressors. Another big area is just the lack of understanding we really have about what our emotions are. Mm. God and Jesus certainly experienced very many negative emotions. God was angry and jealous, half the Old Testament, it seems like. And, Jesus wept, felt abandoned, felt forsaken, was concerned in the garden. So these negative feelings themselves, they're not bad necessarily. That's just our warning system that God's given us to let us know, hey, something might not be going right. There might be a potential problem. Just like if we're in the woods and we see a tiger, we should be afraid, worried, concerned. But a lot of times in our society, we're not taught very well how to deal with those emotions. We think if we have those negative emotions that we're a failure, we're a loser, we can't cope, things are hopeless. And so what we try to teach is how to help people understand their emotions. And, if there's a little bit of stress, anxiety, worry, to be able to say, hey, the stress and anxiety isn't the problem. That's just the messenger letting me know of a problem. How do I dig and do some assessment and reflection and figure out, well, what is the actual problem and how do I manage it in a good and healthy way? So those are some of the, sort of psychological aspects of things. Winter, like we talked about, winter is here, and winter for very many people is a difficult time of year. Mm-hmm. We're not quite sure the exact reasons why, but we know that people that live in sunnier southern conditions have a lot less depression during the winter, and people in the northern climates like you and myself there's a lot more higher prevalence of depression during the winter because of the light. It seems like we got shorter days. There's not as much sunlight to be able to get all the things done that this hectic time of season needs. So those are big big contributors to this being a very stressful time of year for people.
All right, let me back up a little bit and have you take a few seconds and give us an update on Lighthouse Ministries and what you do and what you provide and how people can get a hold of you.
Oh, sure. I'm a Christian psychiatrist, and You know, as a Christian psychiatrist, when you move into an area, various pastors and churches and ministries sort of find out about you and say, wow, we need to refer all our people there because it's hard to find a Christian psychiatrist. And so as a result of that, I just kept on getting more and more calls, and it was really hard to find for people to find Christian care. It's just really difficult for most people to find that. I know in my personal life, I'm also a recovering alcoholic, so I had a difficult time in my younger years with a lot of sinful and inappropriate behavior and alcohol and drug use, and it was hard to find care, especially Christian care, for those struggles. So I always wanted to develop a system that allowed people that were struggling to find some peace, to find some calm, to, you know, be able to get out of that storm. And so that's why we call it Lighthouse Network, as an organization that helps people in the storms of life to find their way through the storms to places of peace and safety. So we have a helpline that takes calls from all over the country, about 600 calls a month, and we help people find care. Most of the calls we get are people struggling with addiction issues and some significant mental health issues, and we try to help them understand the system, navigate the system, and figure out what's the best option for them. Our goal is to connect people to Christian care because we feel that without a relationship with God and applying biblical principles to life, you know, freedom and that abundant living just isn't going to happen. The other thing we do is we develop resources, self-help materials, curriculum, training resources that are help people understand the decision-making process so they can, in a very practical way, understand how to apply all that, all those great truths and principles to the Bible, how to apply them in their daily life as they're driving to work, as they're, you know, parenting their kids, as they're dealing with holiday stressors, and, you know, do we go to the in-laws, do we stay at a hotel? You know, all those decisions impact our life in powerful ways. So we develop resources to help people understand the decision-making process so they can lead that godly life and be a light and salt to their community.
How do you, as a Christian psychologist, begin to help people understand maybe the line between a psychological problem and a spiritual problem?
That's a great question. First of all, just I'm a Christian psychiatrist, so an MD,
okay.
Doing psychiatric work.
Yeah.
But that's a great question, and to me, and that's one of the problems that our society has is trying to figure out, well, what are those three spheres: spirit, mind, and body.
Mm-hmm.
God created us with those three spheres. I mean, we have this brain, you know, this wonderful creation he's given us that's sort of the hardware. We got our mind that's sort of that operating system of the computer. And then we have those spiritual truths, our spiritual sphere that connects us with God and helps us understand through the Holy Spirit's work in our life, you know, have eyes that see and ears that hear the truth and infuse those principles into our life. It's really hard to separate spiritual and psychological, you know, understanding our purpose, understanding our value, being connected. I mean, those are psychological. We play them out in psychological ways, but they're spiritual principles, spiritual guidelines, spiritual assets, you know, that we have to use. In order to do that, we need our brain chemistry. We need a mind to be working, you know, brain-wise, physiologically, to be able to do all those things that spiritually we're being guided and called to do. So those they're not these clear silos that we like to break them out into, and I think that's where our medical community has had a hard time because we're not infusing any of the spiritual truths and principles of the Bible and that relationship with God, you know, into that psychological, physical functioning element to really help and equip people to navigate their life well.
You know, Doctor, with this time of the year, it certainly raises the anxiety level in a lot of people, and anything that they've been dealing with through the rest of the year seems to surface this time of the year. How do you help them to overcome guilt and seek help? I mean, it seems to me that they want help, but they feel guilty to reach out for it because that creates a vulnerability and a reliance on something other than themselves and whatever they're addicted to.
Exactly. That's a great point. You know, there's so much, you know, first of all, just there's so much stigma in our community and society about, you know, getting help. People go for piano lessons. They get coaching in sports. They, you know, get acting lessons. We get lessons in all kind of areas except life and life management. You know, through, you know, growing up in school, I had math courses, science courses, art, drama, never had a decision-making course at all in my life. Yet that's the most important spiritual discipline that we need to develop and hone is the spiritual discipline of decision-making. But people don't really see the need to go get coaching for it. At some point in their life, they realize, wow, my decisions aren't working for me. There's something going wrong here. But to, like you say, to be vulnerable, to open up, to say, I'm going to let somebody else you know, help me and teach me those things. You know, we have our flesh, we have our sin nature, that me-centered part of us that Satan uses to tell us, you're the only one that knows you the best. You're the only one that really loves you. You're the only one that really knows how to take care of you. Just continue to go based on your own instruction book for life. You don't need somebody else's guidance, expertise, or that, you know, that Bible, you know, the best instruction book for living every day. You don't need to go there. Or when we do, we just take bits and pieces of it selectively, but then we still use our own instruction book for living. I think being able to, you know, what I try to do is help people take a look at, well, let's take a look at the decisions you're making, and are they really working for you? Are they really helping you achieve the goals that you want to achieve, the relationship with God, the relationship with yourself, relationship with others? You know, Jesus said the greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, those three sets of relationships, are you really getting out of those what you can and what you really are looking to achieve? And when that's pretty clear to the person that they're not, say, well, yeah, that's, you know, it's hard for people to do that on their own. We have coaches in all kinds of different areas of life. Let's see if we can, you know, look for some coaching and some help that allows us to start to make better decisions, start to analyze, why are we making the decisions we are? What are the, you know, the idols, or what are the things that we're depending on or getting our confidence from that are leading us astray? Because, you know, Satan certainly puts many imposters in front of us to look at and to gaze upon and to lean on instead of our relationship with God and the things he's put into our life, you know, to use in a healthy way. So that's what I try to do, is just take a look at their decision-making and say, you know, we're not looking at blame. We're not looking at to ridicule and to punish and to chastise. We're just trying to, you know, hey, this is where we're at now. Let's see, how do we get better? How do we move forward? And we got to start with decision-making and seeing, you know, what are you resting your decisions on? What's the foundational principles you're using in those decisions? And let's move forward from there.
I know the word selfish is a difficult word to manage in our lives, but isn't there a time to be selfish and just say no and just be alone? I mean, we feel so pressured to be with people and family and things, and if it's not good for your health, why go there?
You know, there's so, you know, people usually don't stop and reflect and say, you know, at Thanksgiving, we stop and say, well, what are we thankful for this whole year? Or at a birthday, we say, well, you know, how was that, you know, year number 48 for me? Or New Year's, boy, you know, how did 2011 go? What do I want to do different in 2012? But really getting down to the nitty-gritty, and it's hard to really assess a whole year in, you know, 15 minutes or a half hour that we spend those times reflecting, but really being able to sit and reflect on, you know, just like you say, what are the healthy things in my life, and what are the unhealthy things? You know, I have a very crisp and short list to tell me if I need to stay engaged in a relationship. If I'm helping that person become more Christ-like, or they're helping me become more Christ-like, I stay in that relationship. If they're not helping me become more Christ-like, or I'm not helping them become more Christ-like, I either put a hold on it or get out of that relationship. Like you said, there's so many situations where we just feel pressure to continue to, you know, be involved in or take part in without assessing, well, you know, where am I, either in this relationship or my life or with other relationships? Is this really a healthy part of my life right now? Or do I just need to take a step back and get some margin on my plate, slow things down? You know, the merry-go-round just keeps on spinning faster and faster and faster in our society. So how do we just stop and slow things down so we can assess and then make those good judgments as to, well, you know, how much do I need to do over this holiday season? You know, this holiday season seems like we're a little cheated this year because, you know, they both fall on weekends. So instead of having holiday days and weekend days to rest, we get the holidays on both weekends. So we don't really get that extra, you know, time that we usually get around the holidays, both weekend times and holiday days. So now people have to pack even more into that, you know, that small window with less time. So trying to figure out, well, what do I need to cut out? Can I do it all? Or, you know, is there realistic limits that I need to abide by?
Well, doctor, the person who, I'm going to go back to the substance abuse, the person who abuses alcohol or drugs usually is in denial. But I want to ask you about the family of that person, because they're always, not always, often in denial as well, especially in our churches, because, you know, Christians, they're perfect. They don't have any sins. And when they feel like, feel that there may be a family member who is abusing something, they don't want to confront that. They don't want to approach that. How do you help them to face the issue?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and unfortunately, it's so prevalent and common there. I mean, you hit it right on the button. You know, even going back to that last question about, you know, why don't people seek help, it's not very often that you hear a pastor speak favorably about somebody on psychiatric medications or somebody seeking, you know, counseling. So it's something, even just from the pulpit, people get a message that's somewhat belittling and implies that they have, you know, less faith or less trust, or they're spiritually, you know, bankrupt or broken. You know, working with the families, you know, there is that veneer. There is that, you know, we say, hey, how you doing? Good, good. How are you? Oh, I'm doing great, too. Yeah, see you next week.
Yeah, bye.
Superficial of, you know, we're okay, I'm okay, you're okay, we're all okay, we're all good Christians walking forward, but yet, you know, I treat even just a lot of pastors, pastors' wives, and pastors' kids, and there's just, you know, we're all fallen people. We all have struggles and difficulties. Some are more glaring than others, some are more private than others, you know, but everybody needs help. They need people to lean on, to care for, to pray in powerful ways, you know, for each other, that whenever you don't allow that to come out, you miss those opportunities to really form a community and be those tangible hands of love and compassion to each other. As well as Satan, you know, thrives when things stay in the dark, when things stay hidden, and when they stay private. You know, he prospers. He goes wild, and you know, and those strongholds just continue to grow and grow and grow. So, you know, it really needs to start as a culture in the church, and you know, from the pulpit and from the leadership, for you know, them to have, you know, some transparency in the process, for them to be favorable to people. You know, a lot of placards will say on the church, you know, people matter to us and people matter to God, but yet when they get inside the church, a lot of people with struggles feel ostracized. You know, nobody really wants to sit in the same pew with them, or they don't invite them out to the dinners, or they don't go and sit at their table in Sunday school class, or those kind of things. So to be able to create that culture of transparency, of care, of compassion, regardless of where you're at, we're all in the same boat together, and we can work on this together, and there are answers. Sometimes it's complicated, but there are answers, and until we start to open up and talk about them, you know, we're not going to find them, and the struggle and the suffering is going to continue. But for people to feel comfortable opening up about some of the skeletons, either in their life or in their spouses, their sons, their, you know, their siblings' life, it's going to take some, you know, a culture in the church of transparency, of care, and true compassion, regardless of where the person is in their stage of spiritual walk or psychological process.
Did you experience that when you were coming through your recovery? I mean, did you experience the church really loving you, or did you feel they were condemning you? Did they accept it, or did you have to go outside the church to get help?
It was, you know, it was all of those. I mean, I wasn't very open about my struggle, so not very many people in those circles knew about it, because I had that, you know, I was the clean cut, you know, bright, you know, knew all my memory verses, you know, came plugging away at, you know, in Sunday school and in youth group, short hair, you know, the clothes not, you know, hanging down to my, you know, to my thighs and those kind of things. So nobody's, you know, even thought to question that I was struggling and, you know, so intensely in my life. And there was no way I was going to let it out. I didn't want to embarrass my parents. I didn't want to embarrass myself. I didn't want to, you know, be that person that all of a sudden, you know, the spotlight is shined on them. And they're not, I don't know if I was worried about ridicule, but certainly some ostracization, or, you know, my status in their eyes was going to be markedly different, you know, from that point on. And it wasn't until my issues, you know, dramatically exploded, and I was in the middle of medical school and got arrested for 6 counts of aggravated assault and was in prison, that, okay, you know, there's no other place to really hide, you know, at this point. So I need to, you know, come forward with it. And, you know, at that moment in jail, God said, hey, look, you know, Carl, you made me your savior at a very young age, but you never made me the Lord of your life. You know, is that something you're willing to do at this point? You've been the Lord of your own life for a while, and you sort of see where that's gotten you. Are you really willing? I know I love you more than anything, more than you'll ever love yourself. Are you willing to make me the Lord of your life? And with that, things changed so dramatically. And my willingness to, I didn't really care what people thought. I knew what God thought of me at that point. So my, you know, opportunity to be more open, to let classmates know, to let, you know, financial aid office know at medical school about what my problems were, and, you know, and so many others, you know, my parents and others, to be let in on, you know, this situation. situations I was struggling with, you know, that started to snowball in a positive direction for me. It just continues to amaze me how God uses those incredibly past stupid mistakes in my life to really reach others and impact others in a powerful way, and allowed me to develop a curriculum that we utilize in different treatment facilities and situations to, you know, really help people understand what's going on inside, how God created and wired them, and what that process is of really wringing all that power of the Bible out to apply in their lives on a daily basis.
Is the medical industry now beginning to recognize the value of spiritual matters in people's lives as much as medical, you know, conditions and treatment?
You know, I think they are. I think, you know, we've come a long way this last 15, 20 years, you know, especially in addictions treatment, probably started it with, you know, AA and higher power, God, and it's been watered down to God as we know him, or spirituality. So I think there's, you know, the mental health and addiction community especially, you know, actually psychiatry, you know, P-S-Y-C-H is, you know, it's Greek for soul. So technically we're the soul doctors, although unfortunately my profession has left a lot of that spiritual stuff, you know, out of the equation. But I think medicine is moving forward. There's a lot of research about prayer and prayer's impact on outcomes after surgery and heart attacks and those kind of things. But unfortunately, it's still that political correct spirituality, you know, with a small s, or God with a small g, or that that Eastern, you know, sort of New Agey, you know, we're sort of all part of an energy, or you know, a spiritual field or spiritual power, as opposed to really seeing, you know, the one true God and that relationship with him and the Holy Spirit in us being the true source of power, you know, for healing and for counseling and for growth. So, you know, we're certainly moving in that direction. And I think as Christians, our Christian community is starting to understand a little bit better, how do we take these biblical principles and help them be intertwined in treatment, both with whether psychological and addiction treatments, or whether it's in other medical treatments from heart disease and cancer. You know, we're finding that just with cancer, with people being able to learn how to forgive and really going through a forgiveness process, that we've had a tremendous impact on outcomes in cancer. So there's just a lot of biblical principles that can be very powerful as far as the healing and renewing of the mind and renewing of the body, you know, in amazing ways. And that's what one of my niches has been, is to go to addiction programs and help them really insert true divine spirituality into their program, not just a sort of a feel-good, you know, small-ass spirituality. But we're moving, but we got a long ways to go.
Well, thank you for your service. And I just want to how do people get a hold of Lighthouse Network? I mean, what's the common number there?
Sure. We 877-562-2565 is our toll-free number. Our services are on our helpline are free to people, and we help you find good Christian treatment options. Our website, lighthousenetwork.org. That's lighthousenetwork.org. And we got a lot of great resources. We got free resources.
Yeah.
We have a phenomenal free daily devotional called Stepping Stones Daily Devotional. It comes out every morning. Practically equips people to understand how to use the Bible in the everyday stressors. You know, we have trials and tribulations in this world, and that's what we're promised, and we're going to go through them. But God also has many promises as to how he's going to deliver us and purify us through those difficulties. And we just have so many great resources on our website to help people manage the storms of their life.
All right, that's lighthousenetwork.org or toll-free 1-877-562-2565 if you need to call and get some help today. Well, Dr. Benzio, thank you. What a tremendous service and a tremendous story. You know, you're a living example, again, of what I say often on the show. Whatever God saves you from brings you through, he turns you around and makes you a minister, too.
he has a great sense of humor, and, you know, what Satan, you know, intends for evil, God just, you know, has a nice way of just throwing back in Satan's face and say, well, no, I have way more power over these things than you can ever imagine.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you, my friend.